Hi, this is Jay Evans from the USDA ARS Bee Research Laboratory, and I'm going to talk today about an article I wrote called Bees Riding the Coattails of Crop Plants. Much is made of the challenges faced by honeybees and other pollinators living in agricultural settings, and bees' lives can, in fact, be brutish and short in some crops at some times. Overall, however, a few bee species have really made croplands work for them, and have shown their benefits to crop production. These species have consequently increased in range and number, thanks to humans and our farming habits. This essay focuses on two distinct cases which have gotten recent attention from researchers. Honeybees have certainly benefited, on the whole, from expansions in human agriculture, since that is often the fire that drives beekeepers to manage colonies and move them in and out of productive settings. The Western honeybee has leveraged its known impacts on pollinated plants with an ability to produce harvestable honey and hive stuffs to achieve a worldwide expansion, reflecting a 20-plus-fold increase in its native range. This puts honeybees in a very small group of non-human animals that thrive on every continent except Antarctica. And hint, all of these are either parasites of or benefactors to our species. This is not to say that farm life is always ideal for honeybees. There will always be tensions between bees, their keepers, and certain farming practices, and recent work documents the importance of smart farming with respect to integrated pest and pollinator management, IPPM. Jacob Pachenka and colleagues in the paper Implementing IPM in Crop Management Simultaneously Improves the Health of Managed Bees and Enhances the Diversity of Wild Pollinator Communities, and that was in Scientific Reports, demonstrated how treatment regimes for pest beetles in and near watermelon crops impact honeybees and other pollinators. In this particular study, bees pollinating watermelons in areas with integrated crop pest management, that is, applied according to economic thresholds and monitoring, as a beekeeper might do for varroa treatments, fared substantially better than did bees growing in environments with preordained pesticide use. Importantly, the authors argue that IPM techniques remain viable for protecting crops from their pests while creating an environment that is safer for pollinators. Remarkably, honeybee colonies showed twice the levels of standing capped brood and nearly double the overall weight gain in areas where IPM methods were deployed. Bumblebees in managed colonies showed even more striking differences in colony weights, actually retreating in size after 6 weeks in more hazardous crop environments. Native bees, which fend for themselves, were half as prevalent in these environments. If you want to read up on the roles played by hundreds of native bee species in securing our food supply, check out a recent review by Sabrina Rondreau and colleagues called Identifying Wild Bee Visitors of Major Crops in North America with Notes on Potential Threats from Agricultural Practices. And that's in Frontiers in Sustainable Food Systems. These authors also highlight watermelons and other members of the squash family, bringing us to an even more remarkable case of a lucky bee whose prospects were greatly improved by human farming decisions. The squash bee Eucera or Pepinapis pruniosa is a ground-nesting bee native to North America, where it and its ancestors pollinated abundant members of the squash family, the cucurbits, from what is now the southwestern United States and Mexico for millennia. While less visible and harder to harness than honeybees, in part because of the challenges above, native bees like the squash bee are important for crop production and wildflower pollination. As per its name, the squash bee is a huge reason why you get tremendous squash production each summer. Some will hold that against them after years of overbearing zucchini plants, but remember, they also pollinate watermelons, pumpkins, and hard squashes. These bees got their biggest break when indigenous peoples of North America started cultivating squash with a passion 1,000 or so years ago, after several thousand years of localized cultivation. The love for squash was passed eastward from the desert southwest, eventually reaching the Atlantic Ocean and southern Canada. Nathaniel Pope and others tied to the Penn State Pollinator Laboratory of Margarita Lopez Uribe have been using genes to trace the paths of the squash bee. In a recent paper titled "Expansion of Agriculture Drives Adaptive Evolution in a Specialized Squash Pollinator" in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, it is shown that one ancestral branch of squash bees was the main hitchhiker during the eastward expansion of squash cultivation. This set of bees might have been especially adept at working with a seasonally abundant but sporadic food source, or perhaps could better tolerate the wetter world found outside of the southwestern deserts. The net result is a lucky and effective bee that now lives thousands of miles from its ancestral home and in some strongly different environments. Some ancestral squash bees have never seen snow, while this branch now digs into the grounds to tough out Nova Scotia winters. The bees did not get moved by humans like honeybees, but instead inched eastward acre by acre and year by year as squash seeds were planted in strange lands. They are quiet but effective pollinators of squashes to this day, rivaling honeybees, especially when stable soils are present and farms are smaller. Like honeybees, they suffer some of the effects of agricultural management. In the Pachenka paper above, squash bees were featured in the native bee set that fared much better in smartly managed crops. Nevertheless, there are more squash bees on the planet than ever before, thanks to agriculture. This is a trait they share with our beloved honeybees. Thank you for listening.